The look of relief on Jace's face made Clary want to put her hand on his shoulder. She didn't. Clever to bring everyone to the hall. It's warded. He slid the glowing seraph blade into his belt. Come on, let's go. Clary recognized the inside of the Hall of Accords the moment she entered it. It was the place she had dreamed about, where she had been dancing with Simon and then Jace. This was where I was trying to send myself when I went through the portal, she thought, looking around at the pale white walls and the high ceiling with its enormous glass skylight through which she could see the night sky. The room, though very large, seemed somehow smaller and dingier than it had in her dream. The mermaid fountain was still there in the center of the room, spurting water, but it looked tarnished, and the steps that led up to it were crowded with people, many sporting bandages. The space was full of shadow hunters, people hurrying here and there, sometimes stopping to peer into the faces of other passers-by, as if hoping to find a friend or a relative. The floor was filthy with dirt, tracked with smeared mud and blood. What struck Clary more than anything else was the silence. If this had been the aftermath of some disaster in the mundane world, there would have been people shouting, screaming, calling out to one another. But the room was almost soundless. People sat quietly, some with their heads in their hands, some staring into space. Children huddled close to their parents, but none of them were crying. She noticed something else, too, as she made her way into the room. Jace and Maya on either side of her. There was a group of scruffy-looking people standing by the fountain in a ragged circle. They stood somehow apart from the rest of the crowd, and when Maya caught sight of them and smiled, Clary realized why. "My pack!" Maya exclaimed. She darted toward them, pausing only to glance back over her shoulder at Clary as she went. "I'm sure Luke's around here somewhere," she called, and vanished into the group which closed around her. Clary wondered for a moment what would happen if she followed the werewolf girl into the circle. Would they welcome her as Luke's friend, or just be suspicious of her as another shadow hunter? "Don't," Jace said, as if reading her mind. "It's not a good..." But Clary never found out what it wasn't, because there was a cry of, "Jace!" and Alec appeared, breathless from pushing his way through the crowd to get to them. His dark hair was a mess, and there was blood on his clothes, but his eyes were bright with a mixture of relief and anger. He grabbed Jace by the front of his jacket. "What happened to you?" Jace looked affronted.
"What happened to me?"
Alec shook him, not lightly.
"You said you were going for a walk. What kind of walk takes 6 hours?
"A long one," Jace suggested.
"I could kill you," Alec said, releasing his grip on Jace's clothes. "I'm seriously thinking about it."
"That would kind of defeat the purpose, though, wouldn't it?" said Jace. He glanced around. "Where is everyone?
Isabel and Max are back at the Penhollows with Sebastian," said Alec.
"Mom and Dad are on their way there to get them, and Aline's here with her parents, but she's not talking much. She had a pretty bad time with a Rescore demon down by one of the canals, but Izzy saved her."
"And Simon?" Clary said anxiously. "Have you seen Simon? He should have come down with the others from the guard."
Alec shook his head. "No, I haven't. But I haven't seen the Inquisitor either, or the Consul. He'd probably be with one of them. Maybe they stopped somewhere else, or..." He broke off as a murmur swept the room. Clary saw the group of lycanthropes look up, alert as a group of hunting dogs scenting game. She turned and saw Luke, tired and bloodstained, coming through the double doors of the hall. She ran toward him, forgetting how upset she'd been when he'd left, and forgetting how angry he'd been with her for bringing them here, forgetting everything but how glad she was to see him. He looked surprised for a moment as she barreled toward him, then he smiled and put his arms out and picked her up as he hugged her, the way he'd done when she'd been very small. He smelled like blood and flannel and smoke. And for a moment she closed her eyes, thinking of the way Alec had grabbed onto Jace the moment he'd seen him in the hall. Because that was what you did with family when you'd been worried about them. You grabbed them and held on to them and told them how much they'd pissed you off. And it was okay. Because no matter how angry you got, they still belonged to you. And what she had said to Valentine was true.
Luke was her family. He set her back down on her feet, wincing a little as he did so.
"Careful," he said. "A croucher demon got me in the shoulder by the Merriweather Bridge."
He put his hands on her shoulders, studying her face.
"But you're all right, aren't you?"
"Well, this is a touching scene," said a cold voice. "Isn't it?"
Clary turned, Luke's hand still on her shoulder. Behind her stood a tall man in a blue cloak that swirled around his feet as he moved toward them. His face under the hood of his cloak was the face of a carved statue, high cheekboned with eagle-sharp features and heavy-lidded eyes.
"Lucian," he said, without looking at Clary. "I might have expected you'd be the one behind this invasion."
"Invasion?" Luke echoed,
and suddenly there was his pack of lycanthropes standing behind him. They had moved into place so quickly and silently, it was as if they'd appeared from out of nowhere.
"We're not the ones who invaded your city, Consul. That was Valentine. We're just trying to help."
"The Clave doesn't need help," the Consul snapped.
"Not from the likes of you. You're breaking the law just by entering the Glass City, wards or no wards. You must know that."
"I think it's fairly clear that the Clave does need help. If we hadn't come when we did, many more of you would now be dead."
Luke glanced around the room. Several groups of shadow hunters had moved toward them, drawn to see what was going on. Some of them met Luke's gaze head on. Others dropped their eyes as if ashamed. But none of them, Clary thought with a sudden surge of surprise, looked angry.
"I did it to prove a point, Malachi."
Malachi's voice was cold.
"And what point might that be?"
"That you need us," Luke said.
"To defeat Valentine, you need our help. Not just the help of lycanthropes, but of all downworlders."
"What can downworlders do against Valentine?" Malachi asked scornfully.
"Lucian, you know better than that. You were one of us once. We have always stood alone against all perils and guarded the world from evil. We will meet Valentine's power now with a power of our own. The downworlders would do well to stay out of our way. We are Nephilim. We fight our own battles."
"That's not precisely true, is it?" said a velvety voice. It was Magnus Bane, wearing a long and glittering coat, multiple hoops in his ears, and a roguish expression. Clary had no idea where he'd come from.
"You lot have used the help of warlocks on more than one occasion in the past, and paid handsomely for it, too."
Malachi scowled. "I don't remember the Clave inviting you into the Glass City, Magnus Bane."
"They didn't," Magnus said. "Your wards are down?"
"Really?" The Consul's voice dripped sarcasm. "I hadn't noticed."
Magnus looked concerned.
"That's terrible. Someone should have told you."
He glanced at Luke.
"Tell him the wards are down."
Luke looked exasperated.
"Malachi, for God's sake, the downworlders are strong. We have numbers. I told you we can help."
The Consul's voice rose.
"And I told you, we don't need or want your help."
"Magnus."
Clary slipped silently to his side and whispered. A small crowd had gathered, watching Luke and the Consul fight. She was fairly sure no one was paying attention to her.
"Come talk to me, while they're all too busy squabbling to notice."
Magnus gave her a quick, questioning look, nodded and drew her away, cutting through the crowd like a can opener. None of the assembled shadow hunters or werewolves seemed to want to stand in the way of a 6-foot-tall warlock with cat eyes and a manic grin. He hustled her into a quieter corner.
"What is it?"
"I got the book."
Clary drew it from the pocket of her bedraggled coat, leaving smeared fingerprints on the ivory cover.
"I went to Valentine's Manor. It was in the library, like you said, and..."
She broke off, thinking of the imprisoned angel.
"Never mind."
She offered him the Book of the White.
"Here, take it."
Magnus plucked the book from her grasp with a long-fingered hand. He flipped through the pages, his eyes widening.
"This is even better than I'd heard it was," he announced gleefully. "I can't wait to get started on these spells."
"Magnus!" Clary's sharp voice brought him back down to earth.
My mom first. You promised.
And I abide by my promises.
The warlock nodded gravely, but there was something in his eyes, something Clary didn't quite trust.
There's something else, too, she added, thinking of Simon. Before you go.
Clary.
A voice spoke breathless at her shoulder. She turned in surprise to see Sebastian standing beside her. He was wearing gear, and it looked right on him somehow, she thought, as if he were born to wear it. Where everyone else looked blood-stained and disheveled, he was unmarked, except for a double line of scratches that ran the length of his left cheek, as if something had clawed at him with a taloned hand.
I was worried about you. I went by Amatis's house on the way here, but you weren't there, and she said she hadn't seen you.
Well, I'm fine. Clary glanced from Sebastian to Magnus, who was holding the Book of the White against his chest. Sebastian's angular eyebrows were raised.
Are you? Your face.
She reached up to touch his injuries. The scratches were still oozing a trace amount of blood. Sebastian shrugged, brushing her hand away gently.
A she-demon got me near the Penhallows. I'm fine, though.
What's going on?
Nothing. I was just talking to Ragnar,
Clary said hastily, realizing with a sudden horror that Sebastian had no idea who Magnus actually was.
Ma Ragnar?
Sebastian arched his eyebrows.
Okay, then.
He glanced curiously at the Book of the White. Clary wished Magnus would put it away. The way he was holding it, its gilded lettering was clearly visible.
What's that?
Magnus studied him for a moment, his cat eyes considering.
A spell book, he said finally. Nothing that would be of interest to a shadow hunter. Actually, my aunt collects spell books. Can I see?
Sebastian held his hand out, but before Magnus could refuse, Clary heard someone call her name, and Jace and Alec descended on them, clearly none too pleased to see Sebastian.
I thought I told you to stay with Max and Isabel, Alec snapped at him. Did you leave them alone?
Slowly, Sebastian's eyes moved from Magnus to Alec.
Your parents came home, just like you said they would.
His voice was cold.
They sent me ahead to tell you they were all right, and so are Izzy and Max. They're on their way. Well, said Jace, his voice heavy with sarcasm. Thanks for passing on that news the second you got here.
I didn't see you the second I got here, said Sebastian.
I saw Clary.
Because you were looking for her.
Because I need to talk to her, alone.
He caught Clary's eyes again, and the intensity in them gave her pause. She wanted to tell him not to look at her like that when Jace was there, but that would sound unreasonable and crazy, and besides, maybe he actually had something important to tell her.
Clary?
She nodded. All right, just for a second, she said, and saw Jace's expression change. He didn't scowl, but his face went very still. I'll be right back, she added, but Jace didn't look at her. He was looking at Sebastian. Sebastian took her by the wrist and drew her away from the others, pulling her toward the thickest part of the crowd. She glanced back over her shoulder. They were all watching her, even Magnus. She saw him shake his head once, very slightly. She dug her heels in. Sebastian, stop. What is it? What do you have to tell me? He turned to face her, still holding her wrist.
I thought we could go outside, he said. Talk in private?
No, I want us to hear, she said, and heard her own voice waver slightly, as if she weren't sure.
But she was sure.
She yanked her wrist back, pulling it out of his grasp. What is going on with you?
That book, he said. That Fel was holding. The Book of the White. Do you know where he got it?
That's what you wanted to talk to me about?
It's an extraordinarily powerful spell book, explained Sebastian. And one that, well, that a lot of people have been looking for a long time.
She blew out an exasperated breath. All right, Sebastian, look, she said. That's not Ragnar Fell. That's Magnus Bane.
That's Magnus Bane?
Sebastian spun around and stared before turning to Clary with an accusatory look in his eyes.
And you knew all along, right? You know Bane.
Yes, and I'm sorry. But he didn't want me to tell you, and he was the only one who could help me save my mother. That's why I gave him the Book of the White. There's a spell in there that might help her.
Something flashed behind Sebastian's eyes, and Clary had the same feeling she'd had after he'd kissed her, a sudden wrench of wrongness, as if she'd taken a step forward expecting to find solid ground under her feet and instead plunged into empty space. His hand shot out and grabbed her wrist.
You gave the book of the white, to a warlock? A filthy downworlder?
Clary went very still. I can't believe you just said that.
She looked down at the place where Sebastian's hand encircled her wrist.
Magnus is my friend.
Sebastian loosened his grip on her wrist, just a fraction.
I'm sorry, he said. I shouldn't have said that. It's just, how well do you know Magnus Bane?
Better than I know you, Clary said coldly.
She glanced back toward the place she'd left Magnus standing with Jason Alec, and a shock of surprise went through her. Magnus was gone. Jason Alec stood by themselves watching her and Sebastian. She could sense the heat of Jace's disapproval like an open oven. Sebastian followed her gaze, his eyes darkening.
Well enough to know where he went with your book?
It's not my book. I gave it to him, Clary snapped. But there was a cold feeling in her stomach, remembering that shadowed look in Magnus's eyes. And I don't see what business it is of yours either. Look, I appreciate that you offered to help me find Ragnar Fell yesterday, but you're really freaking me out right now. I'm going back to my friends.
She started to turn away, but he moved to block her.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said what I did. It's just, there's more to all this than you know.
So tell me.
Come outside with me. I'll tell you everything.
His tone was anxious, worried.
Clary, please.
She shook her head. I have to stay here. I have to wait for Simon.
It was partly true and partly an excuse. Alec told me they'd be bringing the prisoners here.
Sebastian was shaking his head. Clary, didn't anyone tell you? They left the prisoners behind. I heard Malachi say so. The city was attacked and they evacuated the guard, but they didn't get the prisoners out. Malachi said they were both in league with Valentine anyway, that there was no way letting them out wouldn't be too much of a risk.
Clary's head seemed to be full of fog. She felt dizzy and a little sick.
That can't be true.
It is true, Sebastian said. I swear it is.
His grip on Clary's wrist tightened again and she swayed on her feet.
I can take you up there. Up to the guard. I can help you get him out. But you have to promise me that you'll...
She doesn't have to promise you anything, Jace said.
Let her go, Sebastian.
Sebastian, startled, loosened his grip on Clary's wrist. She pulled it free, turning to see Jace and Alec, both scowling. Jace's hand was resting lightly on the hilt of the seraph blade at his waist.
Clary can do what she wants, Sebastian said.
He wasn't scowling, but there was an odd, fixed look about his face that was somehow worse.
And right now she wants to come with me to save her friend. The friend you got thrown in prison.
Alec blanched at that, but Jace only shook his head.
I don't like you, he said thoughtfully. I know everyone else likes you, Sebastian, but I don't.
Maybe it's that you work so hard to make people like you.
Maybe I'm just a contrary bastard, but I don't like you. And I don't like the way you're grabbing at my sister. If she wants to go up to the guard and look for Simon, fine, she'll go with us, not you.
Sebastian's fixed expression didn't change.
I think that should be her choice, he said. Don't you?
They both looked at Clary. She looked past them toward Luke, still arguing with Malachi. I want to go with my brother, she said. Something flickered behind Sebastian's eyes. Something that was there and gone too quickly for Clary to identify it, though she felt a chill at the base of her neck, as if a cold hand had touched her there.
Of course you do, he said, and stepped aside.
It was Alec who moved first, pushing Jace ahead of him, making him walk. They were partway to the doors when she realized that her wrist was hurting, stinging as if it had been burned. Looking down, she expected to see a mark on her wrist where Sebastian had gripped her, but there was nothing there. Just a smear of blood on her sleeve where she had touched the cut on his face. Frowning, with her wrist still stinging, she drew her sleeve down and hurried to catch up with the others.
Chapter 12. De Profundis.
Simon's hands were black with blood. He had tried yanking the bars out of the window and the cell door, but touching any of them for very long seared bleeding score marks into his palms. Eventually he collapsed, gasping on the floor, and stared numbly at his hands as the injuries swiftly healed, the lesions closing up and the blackened skin flaking away like in a video on Fast Forward. On the other side of the cell wall, Samuel was praying.
If when evil cometh upon us as the sword, judgment or pestilence or famine, we stand before this house and in thy presence, and cry unto thee in our affliction, then thou wilt hear and help.
Simon knew he couldn't pray. He tried it before, and the name of God burned in his mouth and choked his throat. He wondered why he could think the words but not say them, and why he could stand in the noonday sun and not die, but he couldn't say his last prayers. Smoke had begun to drift down the corridor like a purposeful ghost. He could smell burning and hear the crackle of fire spreading out of control, but he felt oddly detached, far from everything. It was strange to become a vampire, to be presented with what could only be described as an eternal life, and then to die anyway when you were 16.
Simon!
The voice was faint, but his hearing caught it over the pop and crackle of growing flames. The smoke in the corridor had presaged heat. The heat was here now, pressing against him like an oppressive wall.
Simon!
The voice was Clary's. He would know it anywhere. He wondered if his mind was conjuring it up now, a sense memory of what he'd most loved during life to carry him through the process of death.
Simon, you stupid idiot, I'm over here, at the window.
Simon jumped to his feet. He doubted his mind would conjure that up. Through the thickening smoke he saw something white moving against the bars of the window. As he came closer, the white objects evolved into hands gripping the bars. He leaped onto the cot, yelling over the sound of the fire.
Clary?
Oh, thank God. One of the hands reached out, squeezed his shoulder. We're going to get you out of here.
How?
Simon demanded, not unreasonably. But there was the sound of a scuffle, and Clary's hands vanished, replaced a moment later by another pair. These were bigger hands, unquestionably masculine, with scarred knuckles and thin pianist fingers.
Hang on.
Jace's voice was calm, confident, for all the world as if they were chatting at a party instead of through the bars of a rapidly burning dungeon.
You might want to stand back.
Startled into obedience, Simon moved aside. Jace's hands tightened on the bars, his knuckles whitening alarmingly. There was a groaning crack, and the square of bars jerked free of the stone that held it and clattered to the ground beside the bed. Stone dust rained down in a choking white cloud. Jace's face appeared at the empty square of window.
Simon, come on!
He reached down. Simon reached up and caught Jace's hand. He felt himself hauled up, and then he was grabbing at the edge of the window, lifting himself through the narrow square like a snake wriggling through a tunnel. A second later, he was sprawled out on damp grass, staring up at a circle of worried faces above his. Jace, Clary, and Alec. They were all looking down at him in concern.
You look like crap, vampire, Jace said. What happened to your hands?
Simon sat up. The injuries to his hands had healed, but they were still black where he'd grabbed at the bars of his cell. Before he could reply, Clary caught him in a sudden fierce hug.
Simon, she breathed, I can't believe it. I didn't even know you were here. I thought you were in New York until last night.
Yeah, well, Simon said, I didn't know you were here either. He glanced at Jace over his shoulder.
In fact, I think I was specifically told that you weren't.
I never said that, Jace pointed out.
I just didn't correct you when you were, you know, wrong. Anyway, I just saved you from being burned to death, so I figured you're not allowed to be mad.
Burned to death. Simon pulled away from Clary and stared around. They were in a square garden surrounded on two sides by the walls of the fortress and on the other two sides by a heavy growth of trees. The trees had been cleared where a gravel path led down to the hill to the city. It was lined with witchlight torches, but only a few were burning, their light dim and erratic. He looked up at the guard. Seen from this angle, you could barely even tell there was a fire. Black smoke stained the sky overhead, and the light in a few windows seemed unnaturally bright, but the stone walls hid their secret well.
Samuel, he said. We have to get Samuel out.
Clary looked baffled.
Who?
I wasn't the only person down there. Samuel. He was in the next cell.
The heap of rags I saw through the window? Jace recalled.
Yeah, he's kind of weird, but he's a good guy. We can't leave him down there.
Simon scrambled to his feet.
Samuel? Samuel!
There was no answer. Simon ran to the low barred window beside the one he'd just crawled through. Through the bars, he could see only swirling smoke.
Samuel, are you in there?
Something moved inside the smoke. Something hunched and dark.
Samuel's voice, roughened by smoke, rose hoarsely.
Leave me alone. Go away.
Samuel, you'll die down there.
Simon yanked at the bars. Nothing happened.
No. Leave me alone. I want to stay.
Simon looked desperately around to see Jace beside him.
Move, Jace said. And when Simon leaned to the side, he kicked out with a booted foot. It connected with the bars, which tore free violently from their mooring and tumbled into Samuel's cell. Samuel gave a hoarse shout.
Samuel, are you all right?
A vision of Samuel being brained by the falling bars rose up before Simon's eyes. Samuel's voice rose to a scream.
Go away!
Simon looked sideways at Jace.
I think he means it.
Jace shook his blonde head in exasperation.
You had to make a crazy jail friend, didn't you? You couldn't just count ceiling tiles or tame a pet mouse like normal prisoners do.
Without waiting for an answer, Jace got down on the ground and crawled through the window.
Jace!
Clara yelped. And she and Alec hurried over, but Jace was already through the window, dropping into the cell below. Clary shot Simon an angry look.
How could you let him do that?
Well, he couldn't leave that guy down there to die, Alec said unexpectedly, though he looked a little anxious himself. It's Jace we're talking about here?
He broke off as two hands rose up out of the smoke. Alec grabbed one and Simon the other, and together they hauled Samuel like a limp sack of potatoes out of the cell and deposited him on the lawn. A moment later, Simon and Clary were grabbing Jace's hands and pulling him out, though he was considerably less limp and swore when they accidentally banged his head on the ledge. He shook them off, crawling the rest of the way onto the grass himself and then collapsing onto his back.
Ouch, he said, staring up at the sky. I think I pulled something.
He sat up and glanced over at Samuel.
Is he okay?
Samuel sat hunched on the ground, his hands splayed over his face. He was rocking back and forth soundlessly.
I think there's something wrong with him, said Alec.
He reached down to touch Samuel's shoulder. Samuel jerked away, almost toppling over.
Leave me alone, he said, his voice cracking. Please, leave me alone, Alec.
Alec went still all over.
What did you say? He said to leave him alone, said Simon. But Alec wasn't looking at him, didn't even appear to notice he had spoken.
He was looking at Jace, who, suddenly very pale, had already begun to rise to his feet.
Samuel, Alec said. His tone was strangely harsh. Take your hands away from your face.
No.
Samuel tucked his chin down, his shoulders shaking.
No, please, no.
Alec, Simon protested. Can't you see he isn't well?
Clary caught at Simon's sleeve. Simon, there's something wrong. Her eyes were on Jace. When weren't they? As he moved to stare down at the crouched figure of Samuel. The tips of Jace's fingers were bleeding where he'd scraped them on the window ledge, and when he moved to push his hair back from his eyes, they left bloody tracks across his cheek. He didn't seem to notice. His eyes were wide, his mouth a flat, angry line.
Shadow Hunter, he said. His voice was deathly clear. Show us your face.
Samuel hesitated, then dropped his hands. Simon had never seen his face before, and he hadn't realized how gaunt Samuel was, or how old he looked. His face was half covered by a thatch of thick gray beard, the eyes swimming in dark hollows, his cheeks grooved with lines. But for all that, he was still, somehow, strangely familiar. Alec's lips moved, but no sound came out. It was Jace who spoke.
Hodge, he said.
Hodge? Simon echoed in confusion. But it can't be. Hodge was... And Samuel... He can't be. Well, that's